All right, I'm on. Ready? Okay. My name is Marilyn Mitchell, and my first point, I have 4 points, is that the Helios computer should stay in Oakland. You know, I don't think it should be down in the Bay or some of these other places too close to the water. It should stay in Oakland. They need the jobs, they need new infrastructure and improved housing. And the labs should spend their time not building new buildings that are going to make more problems, like the nanotech, but cleaning up what's already there, the things we've heard about, the tritium, the radiation, and the PCBs, and the nanotech. And I have a little thing I might want to try to read real quick on nanotech. This was from the Daily Cal, and they said that the Lawrence Berkeley labs failed to meet the city's new reporting requirements, and those were details of, they were supposed to submit details of substances they use, what they're used for, potential risks, along with safety procedures and how to deal with nanoparticles, and they didn't do that. And Nabil Hadapathy, I can't say his name, but he's the head of toxics, and he said that the nanoparticles can pass through your skin. And Jean Bernardi from the Committee for Toxic Waste, she's mentioned that they can get stuck in your lungs. And I'd like to see more about this, but I want to see less nanotech. They don't belong in a populated area. They need to go, too. But anyway, moving right along. So the lab shouldn't be making more pollution. They need to be cleaning up what they have. The Helios computer seems to be there to measure global warming effects on the tides and hurricanes and the global warming, how fast it's advancing. But I don't think we need to measure it. They're really scary things, and I can't begin to mention them in a minute. We know our countries, the major cause of global warming, and so I believe that the labs need to return to their original mission, which was energy conservation. And that's what we need all over. Because whatever they make, they say this is good, whatever. But if we don't conserve, and that's the best thing they could do for global warming. And if you could just, since I have more time, I'll just say, I'm very saddened because some of us were talking after the last meeting and we were saying, the folks here, they're not the folks who are going to be voting on that. You guys are the PR people and more PR people and nice smiling faces and you're getting an education, but what about the people that are going to vote on this?
Lakewood Mary, then Janice Thomas, then Leslie Emington Jones.
Can I use this? Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm Lakewood Mary, and I'm a proud to be a resident of Berkeley, a city whose residents voted for Measure G, leading the nation on what steps a city can do to mitigate climate change. I am also involved at the UN level as an NGO delegate to the UN Commission on Sustainable Development for the past 10 years, and my colleagues have just returned from Bali, and I've been on internet communications with them about the climate change talks. And it really, I'm going to put those comments in written comments later, but I can't impress upon you how important it is to include the public voice, the local community, who are going to be impacted by new projects that are brought on board. And with Berkeley's Measure G and climate change, what we're trying to do to change that, does this project really fit in with our values and local laws? When we have a university that exempts itself from our own local laws and continues to insist that their development has no negative impacts when we keep living with the outcomes day after day, year after year? CEQA requires a thorough investigation of environmental impacts, not listing probable mitigations. How can you justify destroying the environment to create projects that are mitigating climate change? Yes, we need to harness the sun's energy for a secure, sustainable future, but the agendas of this project are not all known, are not all subject to public scrutiny, therefore do not meet CEQA regulations for transparent assessment of environmental harm. Unfortunately, corporations such as BP are hiding under the skirts of this public university under the guise of providing a public benefit, when a corporation is actually benefiting at our expense and at the expense of the environment. I think this hearing is a joke. CEQA is very specific on what is required. We have some really huge environmental concerns, and there should be several hearings. There's a lot of scientific unknowns, and I also suggest looking into Section F in CEQA under energy. There's also impacts on environment that have not been even paid attention to under that section of CEQA. I think this project should be moved. I think it doesn't belong in Strawberry Canyon. And as a resident of Berkeley, I think the university needs to start paying attention to people like me. I don't want to have to sit in trees. I don't want to have to lock down the buildings to be heard. I don't want to have to stand as a citizen to protect our environment and also to have you follow our own laws.
Thank you.
There has to be a change.
Thank you. Thank you. And Leslie Hamilton Jones, and then Robin Freeman, if you're here now.
Good evening. I'm just going to riff off of the comments that I've heard tonight. The first thought that comes to mind is that the study of impacts has been way too narrow, way too local. And then, in fact, there should be a global environmental impact analysis. That's quite clear from hearing people talk. Since I've been, I live in the canyon and I've been following pretty closely lead activities since 1993, I'm kind of flooded with details, and I'm afraid I'm going to bore people if I went where I want to go in my head. But one of the things that occurs to me, I saw Tom Platt in the audience earlier. And for those who don't know, Tom Platt is with UC Berkeley. He's with the Office of Emergency Preparedness. And he's in charge of making sure that the vegetation in the canyon is reduced to the extent possible. He was here because, even though, as the earlier lab representative said, this is the UC Regents land, I'm afraid that was obfuscating the issue. It's very interesting that you brought that up, because, in fact, LBAL land, I believe, has extended its boundary into UC Berkeley jurisdiction. So that's one of my questions. To clarify the history, because I do know that this happened over the past maybe 5 years, where UC Berkeley has given up some of its land to the lab for purposes of vegetation management. So this raises the question, why do you all need vegetation management more than UC Berkeley does? And that's because of the research you do. And that is because you are in a wildflower area. And so this is clearly, there's a relationship between what you do in welfare and hazards. And that in turn has an effect on biological resources. So I wonder, a second question then is, have you looked at the impact to biological resources, not just from the building, but from vegetation management? Yeah, I would like to know that too. The clustering concept, that is very offensive because it is based on its location and proximity to the molecular foundry. Yet, as this previously stated, the molecular foundry, and yes, I see some head shaking from lab employees right now, but that was done with Alice, was teared up with a 1987 document, and now we have this project. That's a standalone. So please explain
what relationship to any clan this has, and why, therefore, it has to be clustered in this location. This is very bogus reasoning, and if it weren't as serious as it were in terms of unknown health effects, unknown toxics, unknown hydrology impacts, all of this is uncertainty because this is research that is uncertain. We do not know even what research is going to be done, do we? And tell me you do, and that's the question. Do you know exactly what research you will be doing? Exactly. No impact.
Leslie Emington Jones. I have had the privilege of serving on the Landmarks Preservation Commission. I was on the commission the evening that it made a motion to, with an understanding that Strawberry Canyon have an eligibility for the National Register of Historic Places. Now, in the EIR, that's rather poo-pooed, but the fact of the matter is that the canyon has been assumed by all of us to be a kind of public trust. And ownership may be appropriated by an entity that we can't get to or that can discount us. But I would put forward that we all understand it as a special place in the whole Bay Area, and certainly anybody who comes to the Bay Area. Now, I didn't get very far in this EIR because, for whatever reason, but the first two pages is where I stopped. Because there's some assumptions in the first two pages that just bear some explanation, and I'm going to pose them to you in terms of two questions. One is, CEQA law says that a public agency reviews the effort to explain the environmental impact, and it seems to me there's a huge conflict of interest here. And our country is very involved in conflict of interest. As we get more and more corporate and bodies of economics merge continually to save their economic skins, the university is becoming merged with a world that is happy to self-approve itself. And I would ask you, please, tell us why you have the right to self-approve your own project. Okay. The next question I would like to ask is the mission of the university. In the second, so many paragraphs down, you as all the EIRs do, you flaunt that there's a mission given to you from 1870. And I would say to you, and would you please tell us why you are following the mission of the university as granted by the legislature in its meaning, in its scope, and for education of the student to become a civilized person in the state. Please answer the mission, how you understand the mission, and how it relates to this project, and why you have the sole right to be the public agency that reviews this project. Thank you. Robin Freeman, Biff Stockton, we'll now go to our second round. I have five cards for people who wanted to speak again. If others want to speak, we have about 15 minutes. If you would like to speak again, we give another card in. Anonymous?
Did I write all my other cards so I can change the paper?
I'll do it.
Can you write my name down there too?
There you go.
Anonymous?
I just want to continue my comments. Some of the previous complaints about impact sciences were from the LA County Regional Planning Director, James Hartle, for unsatisfactory quality of their review on the 23,000 house Newhall Ranch project, including inaccurate identification of species, improper location and mapping, and generally incomplete and careless work. Therefore, my comments are mostly directed to the people in the audience, and I encourage you to follow up on these. I would like to see records of previous earthquake history in the vicinity. You'll note that 6 days ago at 8 o'clock p.m., an earthquake occurred less than 1 mile from the director of the lab's house, Steve Chu, as well as 1 mile from the lab itself, rather the site itself. Simply to state that the project site is not on a fault is insufficient. The question of being subject to rupture by an underlying fault is not the only concern. The project site is very close to a fault line expected.
Hold on. You're talking too fast.
Okay.
Sorry, you gotta go back about 2 seconds.
Okay, simply to state that the project site is not on a fault line is insufficient. The question of being subject to rupture by underlying fault is not the only concern. The project site is very close to a fault line expected to produce a major earthquake, and should any significant earthquake happen, its impact will be felt strongly due to proximity. Okay. Also regarding groundwater contamination, the conceptual model of tritium flow used in the EIR is insufficient. Slug testing and well screening of the Great Valley Group in Chicken Creek Canyon are necessary, but were not done for the EIR. The hydrogeological study is unable to detect movement because the groundwater monitoring well nearest to the downward front of the plume is at least 200 feet away from that front. Consequently, the reliance on this study represents almost willful ignorance. I'm also curious as to whether a public hearing will be held in Oakland, given that the project site is entirely within the jurisdiction of Oakland. I'd also like to say that, contrary to Jeff Philibert's statements, the EIR is subject to NEPA, a National Environmental Policy Act, because it was approved in part by a federal agency. Section 15220 of the CEQA guidelines of 2000 state NEPA applies to projects which are carried out, financed, or approved in whole or in part by federal agencies. The federal government has in fact given approval for the project. Paul Gottlieb, the Assistant General Counsel for Technology Transfer and Intellectual Property at the U.S. Department of Energy, a federal agency, approved a waiver for the project in a memo entitled Approval of Alternative Benefit, dated October 3, 2007. The approval was given to waive the agreement for the EBI from subjection to United States Code 35, Section 204, Preference for United States Industry.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something about the new access road. When you have a new access road in an EIR, then that's considered growth-inducing, because then we're going to be able to get to those other buildings. And so if it's standalone, it's standalone, but if there are cumulative impacts, there are cumulative impacts. And so when you're going to build a road into the whole lab, then there's going to be, like, more people driving into the lab. And so we have to count that. And then another growth-inducing thing that I don't think is really mentioned is the whole connection to the Green Corridor thing. So what's going to happen is we're going to have spin-off companies that are going to be in the Green Corridor, and there's going to be, like, transfer of materials from the lab down to these places down near the bay, and then it's going to be more car trips. And so that's a whole growth-inducing thing, a new industry that isn't really addressed in this EIR. And so I do want to mention about the little problem with Centennial Drive, how, like, when you're driving up there past the Botanical Garden, then all of a sudden, like, you go on a little overpass where it's sliding down the hill, where they had a little problem with the garage up there, when the parking lot across the Botanical Garden, they built that. It made the whole corner there slump. And so we're going to need to fix that somehow. And it's just amazing how the city doesn't have to put in any new roads for this, to build 10 more buildings up there, not a single new road. Now, the wastewater options. I like how you've considered how there's going to be new wastewater options, because you see we're at capacity now, and so if we like make it bigger, then we can also build those other buildings up there and keep track of all the wastewater coming off the hill, and then that would be also growth inducing if you're going to upgrade the entire sanitary sewer system through the campus. And so I'm a little confused as to how this is a document when you have a long-range development plan in place, but instead you're thinking you would amend it, you know, 1980. If the lawsuit was prevailing, you'd amend the 87. Well, that doesn't really work for planning. And so what we have is a whole end run around the CEQA process, and the people who live in California actually expect those laws to be respected, and that we would look at all the impacts. And so the biggest problem I see is the sort of interface between UC and Berkeley. And so there was nothing in the long-range development plan about the campus, about the Helios building and how we're going to have to drive up there all the time and bring the mail and all that kind of stuff. And so, and like the people who get to go to eat at the cafeteria are, you know, the people we're trying to attract really want to go out for sushi. And so like, the shuttle that comes down the hill, like, they're going to park, like, at that nice new 900 parking. Where is it? Where am I going to park my car? And where are we all going to park our cars? At the corner of Gailey and Rimway. Okay, I'm just going to be parking down at Gailey and Rimway. Gailey at the Rimway parking lot. Thank you.
This British Petroleum project is a perfect example and confirmation and affirmation that the University of California is a weapons of mass destruction proxy or contractor for the Zionist Anglo-American economic empire. And Canada, the United States, and Israel are just colonies and military proxies for the City of London and Wall Street. I'm sure that many of you do not know about HAARP. HAARP is another weapon of mass destruction developed by the University of California, actually covertly with the Soviet Union. And the reason the U.S. is in a mess is because in the 1950s, when the Soviet Union offered to give the United States oil companies their discovery that oil is abiotic, so there's almost an endless supply, it's from outgassing of planet Earth, the U.S. oil companies said, no, we don't want it. And then they began murdering scientists who were developing alternative energies. That's why we're stuck with oil. And the University of California has a standing contract with Homeland Security, law enforcement, and the military to conduct gang stalking and the experiments with non-lethal weapons just developed at the nuclear weapons labs. That was a pretty interesting discovery since I've been the target, especially from the Lawrence Berkeley lab. And I discovered that the Emergency Response Center headquarters for Alameda County is inside the Livermore Nuclear Weapons Lab. Dr. Henry Kissinger proposed in his memorandum to the National Security Council that depopulation should be the highest priority of U.S. foreign policy towards the Third World, wherever a lessening of population can increase the prospects for such stability, population policy becomes relevant to resources supply and to the economic interests of the U.S. That was 1974. And since then, the University of California has been involved with the Genome Project, which is eugenics with a fancy name on it. That's depopulation. Genetically modified foods are being used for depopulation. And it's very interesting that our governor, Schwarzenegger, was put into office by Jacob Rothschild, who is the head of the City of London Bankers. Also, city managers, our mayor, and the Association of Bay Area Governments all work for Jacob Rothschild, not for us.
Thank you. Carol Sell, LA Voice.
I'm Gray Breck, and I'm a historical geographer, and I'm a visiting scholar here at the university where I got my BA, my MA, and my PhD. So I've been around here for quite some 40 years, as a matter of fact. I first came to Berkeley in 1967, and that was about 4 years after I read a book that had a profound influence on the rest of my life. It was written by a woman named Rachel Carson. It was called Silent Spring. I'm sure many of you have read it. And you might remember that the beginning of Silent Spring is an eloquent 690-word parable, which encapsulates the idea of a world in which everything is dying or has died. And Rachel Carson wound that beautiful and terrifying vision up by saying the people had done it to themselves. Many people think that Silent Spring is about pesticides. In fact, what it's really about is Carson's understanding that once you produce toxics, there is no way that you can contain them. They will get into the environment. And when those toxics are biological or nanotechnological or radiological, it becomes even more terrifying. As a resident of Berkeley, I was worried that we have an industrial zone on the west side of the city along the railroad tracks. I discovered that there is a much larger and more worrisome industrial zone up in the hills, which Carol Schemmerling talked about. It is huge. It's terrifying when you get up there. I went to hear a talk at the Molecular Foundry. It was not easy to do so. And I found that not only, this is a facility that, as people have said, was built up there with little notice and a negative declaration. I discovered then when I was up there that they are venting experimental nanoparticles over the Bay Area, and almost nobody that I know of in the Bay Area understands that this material is being vented. I don't think that there's any way to control it or to contain it, as a matter of fact. I am extremely scared about this stuff, and the idea that it will be joined with a biotechnological facility, which is, as I understand it from this presentation, is why those two must be together. This is very good reason, I think, for everybody in the Bay Area to be extremely concerned about what this means for all of us. Thank you very much.
Things that I asked some of the employees of the lab about is their health. And everybody said, well, I mean, it's fine, you know, when we come to work here, they give us a physical. I don't know whether or not you guys have regular physicals, or whether or not the lab keeps records of the kinds of physical problems that the employees have. I recently met a representative of a group of widows, a scientist from the lab, who all died from the same very rare brain cancer. Needless to say, the lab has denied that there was any chance that it might have happened because they worked at the lab. I don't know what work they were doing, but they did work at the lab, and they all died from the same thing. I would wonder, I mean, what Gray says is true about the health of our community, but don't you people ever question whether or not you're being exposed to things in a greater concentration even than perhaps some of us down the hill might be? Don't you think about these things? What does the lab do about it? What kind of records are there? What reports are made? Are they made public?
Just two quick comments. One of them has to do with the lab and its the fact that it doesn't have a buffer to the community. If you look around the country, you see these national labs doing this kind of work pretty unobstructed because they are located in an area like Berkeley with no buffer to the community. And so I look at this particular facility, and you've heard people talk about the nano foundry. I was on the Environmental Commission, and we asked that many of those questions be answered about its research. We still don't know. And so, you know, you need to tell us in your reports just how far a buffer you think you need in order to have this work done up there, including if you're going to combine it with the nano foundry, then maybe you should be doing a evaluation of both of those together, or maybe a CEQA. And also, when I first got here, you said that there wasn't going to be a NEPA investigation here. And then I heard someone else in the public say something to the effect that there was a waiver of some sort. I know that the laboratory is allowed to do the things that it does because it's a federal facility, and hence the NEPA, and also with the US EPA and its oversight. So is the US EPA going to be doing oversight to this facility once it's put in, or is it going to be a California agency, Department of Health Services, going to deal with the radiation and other types of information? We need to know those things, and there should be, I believe, that DOE is a federal facility. It's a federal facility. It's always been a federal facility. It sits up there. If you tear down the Bevatron, you do a NEPA. I mean, if you tear down the building on a university property up there that LBL uses, then NEPA. So why not a NEPA evaluation here? And I ask that we have one. We should have one. We should have an in-depth look.
So one of the things I was saying earlier is that recently the independent newspaper of the UK reported that British Petroleum had committed, quote, the environmental crime of the century, and this involves its plans to go into Canada and commit terrible environmental destruction so as to turn, I believe that it's called tar sands into oil. And this process not only is enormously environmentally destructive immediately, it also is much, much worse than standard oil extraction in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. So one of the questions I have for this so-called environmental impact report is UC Berkeley an accomplice in the environmental crime of the century? And I think I heard one of the previous speakers state that tar sand research is actually part of the EBI's mission. And even if it's not the case, even if this building has nothing to do with that, the point is that this is an opportunity for British Petroleum to greenwash itself and to make it seem like it's an environmentally friendly company, and obviously it's not. So I think this needs to be stated in this environmental impact report. You claim that there will be only significant impacts in the area of visual, air, and traffic. What about the trees that will be affected? What about the wildlife? What about the watershed? What about erosion? What about release of genetically modified organisms? What about the value, environmental and cultural, of the canyon to the people of Berkeley and also the native community? On the subject of the region's property, when this project was presented to us at the very beginning, it was stated that this is the region's property. It was almost this framing as if to say, from that statement flows all of the flows everything else. And I'd like to say that if the regions were planning to build a concentration camp, a death camp, up in Strawberry Canyon, would it being the property of the regions be some sort of excuse for that? I imagine those of you who are sitting at the table right now wouldn't allow yourselves to be part of such a program. You would tell everyone in this room that we had to do everything possible to stop the construction of ovens and gas chambers. Well, guess what, everyone? It's too late on the ovens. The ovens being the nuclear weapons, in my metaphor. Yeah. And the gas chamber is what's going to happen with the enormous deforestation that the EBI is going to bring to us, because our planet is on its way to turning into a gas chamber, and the EBI is going to actually accelerate that. You know, it's not the property of the regions. It's public property, and in any case, In any case, the earth does not belong to us. We belong to the earth. And if it's anyone's property, it's the Native Americans, and not ours, not us white people. Thank you.
You know, I obtained a degree at Mills College in public policy. And one of the things that they teach us at Mills and also at the Goldman Institute at UC Berkeley is when you're looking at policy, you're looking at cost-benefit analysis and consequences. And also what's missing. You always look at what's missing from the agenda, what's missing from the reports, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what's really missing big time from this is the public's viewpoint. CEQA was passed not to be an obstacle to projects, not to be an obstacle to solutions, but to protect something that we find precious, the environment, our biosphere. We cannot take these projects anywhere else except on this planet. And what we're doing here is leaving out the very species, the very biological systems that we depend upon for life. They're not given a say. They're being destroyed. And no one's speaking up for them. And I think that's immoral. I think that's a shame. In 1996, the United States signed a very important document called Agenda, Habitat Agenda in Istanbul. And I suggest everybody get a copy of that because it talks about civil society's participation with government and with the private sector. Because governments alone cannot find solutions to the problems that are destroying the very things that give us life. And this CEQA law demands of us a higher scrutiny that we're not doing here. I'm not against the university. I'm not against public-private sector partnership. What I'm against is being left out. You have a room here full of people who are citizens of this city, who come from different disciplines, that have important on-the-ground experience, knowledge, and want to help. And we're being left out. We're giving 3 minutes, maybe 6 minutes in one evening to be part of this solution. And I think that's criminal. So I want you to all rethink what you're doing here, to rethink what the ramifications are, because we have maybe one shot to do something different in the next maybe 10, 20 years.
Five.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to say something that Carol Schemmerling mentioned about health workers. And to the next meeting on the 3rd, unless there's one this Wednesday, there was an article in the Contra Costa Times, and it showed it was 10 pages of all the terrible health effects workers, and they were not getting their benefits. They were denied benefits, and at least 50% of them haven't gotten them. They're waiting 6 years and dying. And so you ought to see that article. And then the thing about the nanotech, which is the nanotech are these one molecule, hot particles. So how do you make a filter? Because that's got to be one molecule. So if they don't know how to filter it, they shouldn't be up there. But there are lots of things we could do in that building. And I'll, if I finish one more thing here, I'll give you one example. There are a lot of things that help nature, that work with nature, protect nature, that type of thing. I wanted to say that cutting all of these trees, people are mentioning roads and stuff, and there's going to be acres of access roads. There's supposed to be 5 acres of surface parking up there, and they're cutting trees, deforesting all over, but those very mature trees are to clean up the air. And so it's beyond me. The idea that this is a public trust university, but then it's disrespecting its workers, the students that have to, they're the closest to the nanotech that we're hearing about, these particles, and the citizens of the city, they're disrespecting everybody. So they need to get back to doing what they need to do, and I'll give you an example. I'll give you two examples, but I probably won't have time. One, the switchgrass. If you can use the native switchgrass, no genetically modified, we have plains that used to have buffalo. Maybe we could grow it. We have to be careful what we do, not to mess up things, but maybe that's a place you could grow the switchgrass and let the Native Americans have a very important role in giving them a chance to do their thing with nature and do it right. And another thing is that horrible gyre that's out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean with all the plastic, mainly from our country. It's twice the size of Texas. And so the labs could get on out there and get good PR for the world and for everybody, clean up that stuff and collect it all, bring it back up there, send the nanotech someplace underground in the desert, someplace where it won't harm anybody, and work on it there, but use the nanotech facility to clean up things. Like, it wouldn't be that difficult to change those plastics, to split them, and make them into things like my old jacket. And other things that could be useful, or I don't know, something good. And thank you. Oh wait, I have one more thing. Their earthquake faults are supposed to get worse as of 3 or 4 days ago. In the paper, it says the it just says that they just did the research and they're supposed to be much more intensive. So I'll bring copies to the next meeting.
Jen, I just received 3 more. Second round of cards. I think we need to stop the meeting at 9 o'clock, so if you don't mind, I won't accept any more cards. I have Barbara Robin, John Renuzzi, and Terry Combos left to speak. Okay,
Jen? Okay.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak again. Hearing the comments I've heard tonight, I just wanted to say to folks that I think the regents should be fired if they serve by the CIR. And I also think that we should lobby our legislators and change the UC mission statement if it allows this kind of cooperation with industry. The impacts, I believe, are underestimated. You mentioned that there were 3 significant and unavoidable impacts, and you mentioned that one of them was the view impacts. The view generally is a strawberry canyon, and I think it can be argued that there is a cultural landscape, and if the view is negatively impacted, then one could infer that the cultural landscape of the canyon is impacted. So I certainly hope you define how you would define, or that you define strawberry canyon. And I think part of your argument might be that you will take pictures of this proposed structure from, again, Panoramic Hill or certain parts of Centennial. But if you look at Rim Road, if you take a picture from Rim Road and you simulate the facility instead of just putting an arrow, which is what you've done in the draft EIR, I think people will be astonished. And I don't see how any reasonable person could argue that there would not be a cumulative cultural resource impact. So I really hope you address that. I also really object to your aerial view of the site. It was a fake green. If you looked at the initial study aerial view, it was much more yellow. And if you look at Google, it's much more yellow. So I just really, that's just, it's a small thing, but it's really kind of, an example of how the record gets to create a narrative of how this is this wonderful project that's sustainable in design and all this. Been listening to people and thinking about the access road and the blind curve. Do you all intend to put a stoplight there for safety's sake? If so, I think that in itself is a negative impact. And I'm thinking too of lighting at night. And whether or not there's going to be impacts on the wildlife from lighting of those buildings at night. Already, that's a problem with Millennium Foundry that's only compounded by this. And then finally, in the 1, 2, 7 that I have left, how do you measure ecosystem? You've got to look at ecosystem impacts, because as it is, you define the nearest quote wildlife is 50 feet from the project site. You've got to get away from this quantified approach and get more holistic and gestalt and look larger and more sensibly. Thank you.
Barbara Robin again. After all the powerful statements that have been said about the planet and so forth like that, I feel a little bit silly just continuing with my notes, but I do have some remarks to make about growing plants. And I spoke about the soil before, and there is not any extra arable soil. It all displaces either food crops or wildlife. Then there's the very important part about water, though, too, because not only do plants need soil, but they need the water. If we're talking about our own country, we're talking about the Midwest as a possible place to grow these. And the Colorado River goes right through there. It's already seriously oversubscribed. It's also the river that comes down to the Southern California area. Ask the people, your friends down in San Diego and Los Angeles, how things are going for them. They're already thinking about desalinization, and of course that depends on fossil fuel as well. Water quality is really important. Colorado River picks up a lot of salt as it journeys through the seven states that get the water from there. So that brings us maybe over to California. Should we be growing these fuel plants in the Central Valley, for example? Well, you have the issue of snow melt. Now the snow's melting earlier, and you have reservoirs that are going to be either able to contain the flood water or contain the water that you're going to want to use for irrigation, because they can't do both. Actually, unless you can foresee better than we're able to do it now, they have a certain amount of capacity, and you can either use it for one or the other. So it's a game that you have to figure out. And so if these fuels aren't going to be grown in our Midwestern grain belt and not going to be grown in California, where will they be grown? Sounds to me like maybe we're thinking of putting them in somebody else's property. The only way I can see it is that we're going to have to do conservation.
Hi, I hesitated talking because I haven't prepared anything, and I appreciate all the sage comments that we have had tonight. One thing is that when we talk about the reasons for rejecting alternative sites, I don't think they are very profound, because I think that you can meet the requirements if the projects, the CRT and the Helios, were built elsewhere. It says here for the CRT that an alternative off-site location wouldn't work because the objective is to expand the functionality of the lab facilities, provide for cross-disciplinary research, or foster collaborative work environments among researchers, since it would result in a division of resources between locations. And Mr. Shadley talked about the inadequate power supplies, which can always build power supplies. And it said that this was also, location of the CRT could be considered but was rejected because it wasn't included in the UC Berkeley 2020 LRDP. Well, I think it could be amended. I think that we don't have to be in the same location to foster collaborative research. As I mentioned before, with the CRT public commentary, there's such a thing as telecommunication. He talked about a shuttle bus. I think what I've heard tonight is when people are talking on a global perspective, there's been some snickering from some people in the audience, and they're missing the point. I think the main point has been about location. And I don't want to be an activist. I don't want to be here. But, you know, sometimes we have to make a stand. We have to be responsible, even though I am not a scientist. And I want to understand why you want to build in Strawberry Canyon. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. I think that we have to talk about the cumulative report and the cumulative aspects versus the divide and conquer ideas. Divide and conquer is to have the projects be standalone. Divide and conquer is when we were told that there would be an extended comment period for the Helios project, but no reasons are given for the CRT project. I want to know what reasons why the CRT project comment period is not extended, and I'd like that to be a public record. I'd also like to be a public record the written comments, which were for the preparation of the draft EIR. I worked on my comment, and I'd like to hear other people's comments. This is on file, but it's not public access. This makes no sense. Thank you.
I just want to note the fine citizenry of Berkeley has come out, and I've been listening carefully, and I've heard unanimity, complete consensus from this crowd that we don't believe that this lab should be built as proposed and that it should not be built in Strawberry Canyon. So if we have a democracy and if we have a process that's meaningful, I would imagine that the plan would not go forward as it is. And I'd like to echo Janet Thomas that if it does, we should fire the Regent for the University of California. Thank you.
That concludes our public hearing. Thank you. I guess.